From our nation's capital, this is Naps Chat.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you.
Hi, this is Bob Levy, the Director of Legislative and Political Affairs for the National Association of Postal Supervisors, and welcome to this week's edition of Naps Chat. Today, we are privileged to have as our guest Mark McCauley, the Vice President of Government Affairs for the Nonprofit Alliance. Good morning, Mark.
Bob, what a pleasure to have invited me and including me, and I really look forward to a good, robust discussion this morning.
Thank you, Mark. Mark is currently the Vice President of Government Affairs at the Nonprofit Alliance, as I mentioned. He formerly was Vice President of Government Affairs for the Direct Marketing Association, a major player in the postal world. Additionally, and we're going to lead with this, he worked for probably one of the most powerful members of Congress in the 80s and 90s, or early 90s, and that was former Congressman Dan Rostenkowski, who was the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee in the House of Representatives. So, Mark, let me open with this question, if I can. Working for one of the most powerful members of the House of Representatives, what lessons did you learn that you now bring to the Nonprofit Alliance?
Bob, you're harkening back to one of the most interesting and fun parts of my career. I was then a very young staffer for a very powerful member of Congress, Dan Rostenkowski. And what I took away from Dan Rostenkowski and what I miss so dearly about him and many in that era of Congress was that was an era where much of the politics was a handshake. If one committed to vote on an issue, one member of Congress to another, that commitment you could take to the bank. It was a period of honesty and of trust. And I dare say it was a period of great bipartisanship. And the best examples I know of that are the very close bond that Dan Rostenkowski as chairman of the Ways and Means Committee, Tip O'Neill as Speaker of the House, both strong and partisan Democrats, yet they were able to do quite a bit of business with President Ronald Reagan. And I'd say the real landmark of that era, the absolute high watermark, was the passage of the 1986 Tax Reform Act, one of the most sweeping pieces of tax legislation in history, and one that was totally bipartisan. And I'm just going to reminisce about one quick story about how great the trust was between those people of different parties. Dan Rostenkowski, I'll never forget, went to the White House to meet with Reagan, and he said, "Mr. President, I'm going to have to get a more liberal tax bill in 1986 through the House. You have to trust me. The Senate will be more conservative, but when we do a House-Senate conference, I will be very much in the middle and get the bill to a good compromise." Reagan shook his hand and said, "I trust you, Danny." He did what he did in the House. The Senate did what it did. They had a successful conference, and Reagan signed a very significant tax reform act that eliminated many loopholes and lowered tax brackets, something both conservatives and liberals had advocated. So, Bob, thanks for letting me go down memory lane. There were some great memories.
I think that we reminisce about times of yore when things actually got done in Washington. What I do want to talk about is about the Nonprofit Alliance, the organization which you represent. People may not know this, but the nonprofit industry represents around 10% of the American workforce, around 11.4 million jobs. So it is very, very significant. And the Nonprofit Alliance is sort of, if I could sort of characterize it or give a comparison, is the Chamber of Commerce for the nonprofit community. But what is unique about the Nonprofit Alliance, and I want you to weigh in on this, is that it doesn't only have as its members nonprofit organizations like the AARP Foundation or the American Heart Association or the Doctors Without Borders, but it also includes corporate members who are sponsors and supporters of these charitable organizations. Can you talk a little bit about the scope of the Nonprofit Alliance and who they represent and what they advocate for?
Well, Bob, that's a very good description you've provided. And we are an organization, and I really like the metaphor of kind of a chamber of commerce. U.S. Chamber of Commerce is the umbrella group for the for-profit world. I think that's a very good metaphor. We have a very interesting group of nonprofits, and I'll very quickly get into the for-profit side of our membership. That is, Bob alluded to Doctors Without Borders, Disabled American Veterans. Bob mentioned American Heart Association. Alzheimer's Association is one of our very active members. On the corporate side, we have a whole host of organizations that basically are in the business of collecting data and helping the marketing side of a nonprofit. It's very similar to the for-profit world. It's finding, in our case, donors in the nonprofit world, but that's the same as finding customers in the for-profit world. It's getting a sense of how best to approach and bring in new donors in as efficient a way as possible, because there are only so many dollars and you don't want to exhaust your budget finding donors and having very little money left to carry out your mission. In terms of our legislative agenda, we cross paths with Bob and many of his brethren in the postal world. We don't claim the expertise in postal that Bob and some of the other people that are very deeply involved in postal issues, but we do track the issues. And mail is very, very important to us. Mail is important because we still use an enormous amount of it, more than people generally in the for-profit world. And let me be very frank, you really can't ask someone for a nice size contribution for a charitable cause, $1,000, $2,000 with an email. I wouldn't like that. I don't think anyone else would. It's got to be a letter. It's got to be a letter that's focused and purposeful. And that's why the mail will continue to be important for us. Our other areas of focus, as I mentioned about the flow of data, is so important to find our donors and to carry out our missions, to understand if we're being effective in promoting the causes. So we're very active with the two Commerce Committees on the Hill, the Senate Commerce Committee, where data and privacy issues reside, and the House Energy and Commerce Committee. And of course, all roads lead to taxes and tax policy, and we've been very active on a number of tax issues. And that's kind of our world. Bob, I'm going to stop there, and I could certainly focus in subsets of what I just mentioned, but let me stop there and turn things back to you.
Let me talk a little bit about your contributors to your organizations, like the Alzheimer's Organization, or Disabled American Veterans, and so forth. They rely a lot on direct solicitations of donations from folks through the mail. The reason why I would muse it's important to the Postal Service is twofold. Number one, it's the amount of volume that nonprofit puts into the mail stream. But secondly, the remittance of those donations. The contributors have to send back the donations to the folks who are soliciting, and they usually send back the mail with a stamp on it, first-class mail. So if you could talk with me, go a little bit deeper about the reliance of the nonprofit community for solicitations through the United States Postal Service.
Again, as you pointed out, Bob, it is on both ends of the transaction. It is absolutely in soliciting someone for a contribution. And again, it seems to me a bit impersonal to use an email, and a carefully written letter that's hand-signed and so on is really the vehicle, if you will, on the solicitation of donations. And then, as you noted, the sending back of the contribution is a first-class letter, usually. And Bob, you can drill down even deeper than I on this. Isn't that the part of the mail stream that is the most significant in terms of dollars flowing to the Postal Service, that first-class volume?
Right, because the reduction in the amount of first-class mail volume is what is having a tremendous burden on the Postal Service financially, because that is how the business model is sort of constructed, on the revenue derived from first-class mail. Let me ask you this question. And we talk about the mail about being a trusted third party in transmitting communications. The nonprofit community, as other folks, have come to rely more recently, or not necessarily rely, but using internet providers for conveying information. And that has become somewhat controversial more recently. Facebook and Twitter have become controversial conveyors of information. So if you could talk with me about the relative trust that the nonprofit community might have in the Postal Service conveying their message, and sort of contrast it with the newfound concern about using the internet as being the vehicle for information and solicitations?
Well, let me answer that in two ways. First, I agree with you 100%. The mail is a very trusted way to convey our message and to personalize our message. Right now, we're in the midst of a very complicated issue in terms of internet platforms. And to be very, very frank, I'm not sure Solomon, with all his wisdom, knows exactly how we should handle this. We have a very famous part of the 1996 Communications Act, Section 230, that specifically exempts platforms from liability about people that put, let's be very frank, bad things on their platform, hateful things. And I remember the 1996 Communications Act like it was yesterday. The idea was it's very hard for a platform to determine what is good, what is bad, and we wanted to keep platforms out of having to do that. And again, if Solomon were alive 3,000 years later, even he would have difficulty sometimes deciding what is over the line or what isn't. How the issue of platforms will be resolved, I don't know yet. There's a very good argument that we should keep the status quo and not place any liability on platforms. But I think the momentum, I think the political feeling is that there has to be some way to get hateful things off the internet, which is a very understandable goal. I haven't really answered how that issue is going to be resolved because I truly don't know yet. But I will say this, given controversy about what is on various internet platforms, it only makes using the mail even more desirable. Probably the best way I can describe it.
Because in the United States Code, as far as postal regulations go and who enforces postal regulations, there are certain things that cannot be sent through the mail, threatening information, libelous information is, you know, it's all sort of placed in the mail. If it's placed in the mail stream, certain types of information are criminally prosecutable using the mail. So that adds to the trust value of the Postal Service being the messenger on behalf of whether it be a business interest or a nonprofit interest.
I think that's a very good point, Bob. And let me put in a small plug. And I think, again, you're even deeper into this than I am. The mail statutes are just the way Bob described them. And one of the parts of law enforcement that has never gotten its due but deserves it is, and Bob, tell me again the name of the Postal Service arm that that litigates against people, that these people carry firearms. They are very serious.
The Postal Inspection Service.
One does not mess with them. They are very serious about their business. I've talked to people, attorneys that have worked earlier in their career there, and it's a very serious organization, and probably people overlook the fact that in many convictions of crimes, the crime that is most often the one that sends people to jail is not the actual crime itself, but using the mails to commit the crime they did. These are serious people. Everyone in the business knows they are, and they provide a strong level of security so that inappropriate things are kept out of mail. And I'm glad you reminded me.
Yeah, mail fraud is a federal crime, and that protects the integrity of the United States mail.
Absolutely.
Now, I'd like to talk about how the nonprofit community uses the postal system for spreading information, whether it be solicitation, because it's not only solicitation. I mean, there are magazines that are produced by your member organizations that spread information and newsworthy items also.
Absolutely. And that's yet again another part of what we do. You mentioned AARP Foundation, for example. All kinds of information for senior citizens they provide through magazines, et cetera. Again, the Postal Service is that vehicle. And while so much has gone online, and I certainly understand how the trend has gone, there are certain things that a lot of consumers still like. And there's still a large number of consumers who physically want to read a document the old-fashioned way. And that, of course, would be sent through the mail. So that is another part of why the mail is so important to the nonprofit community.
Now, let's talk about the scope of the nonprofit community, because it's not only, as you say, the American Heart Association, we say the Veterans Associations and so forth, but we're talking about educational organizations, fraternal organizations, philanthropic organizations, religious organizations, scientific organizations, and so forth. So this isn't simply sending a contribution for St. Jude's Children's Hospital. This is a very, very big group, a large group of individuals and organizations that participate in your organization and to whom you advocate for.
You're 100% correct about that. And the religious organizations are a fundamental part of our membership, and one that really matters, and really from a old-fashioned lobbying argument, if you will. And Bob and I have had the privilege of working the Hill for a number of years, oftentimes together on particularly postal issues. They can be very effective advocates. And I have had a chance to work with a number of the Catholic organizations recently. And they have an unusual bit of clout, if you will, with their local member of Congress, with their one of their two senators. And they're a lot of fun to work with and an interesting part of our constituency. And I will have to say, an important political asset we have because of their reach and their relationships they have with a lot of elected officials.
And also, it's great to have God on your side.
I will borrow a phrase from Abraham Lincoln. It isn't that God is on our side. We hope we're on God's side. So we try to do that.
Absolutely. Now, I want to talk with you a little bit about something more timely, and that is the COVID-19 pandemic and its effect on the nonprofit community and how the nonprofit community is dealing with that situation in order to make up for the challenges or to basically that it is confronted with.
Well, this is a very, very difficult challenge for us. And I'll be, again, I'll drive right to the core of the issue. The demands on the nonprofit community are greater than they have ever been since probably the 1930s and the height of the Great Depression. For example, this morning, the weekly unemployment claims number came out. It was down slightly from the prior week. It was 1.3 million people filed for unemployment claims last week. Oh, by the way, just 5 or 6 months ago, we would only have 200,000 to 300,000 unemployment claims. So this new, quote, low number is about 5 to 6 times larger of newly unemployed people. And then you have the really scary number, the number of Americans who are still receiving unemployment benefits because they're unemployed, and that is 20 million Americans. We have 20 million Americans who are receiving unemployment benefits because they lost their jobs. This is a level we have not seen since the 1930s, worse than the Great Recession of 2008, and for those of us who have been around a while, even worse than the very deep recession of 1981, 1982. So the demands of people who are genuinely in need is great. Other half of the ledger is we have the same infrastructure to help these people we had before COVID, but the demands on them are even greater. So this is a very, very challenging time for the nonprofit sector.
From a strategic standpoint in soliciting contributions and the revenue coming into the nonprofit sector is probably, I would divide it into two areas. Number one, grants could be governmental grants into organizations, the PPP, for example, from the pandemic assistance from the federal government has assisted many in the nonprofit community, but revamping and upping their solicitation of individual contributors. Do you think that the nonprofit community is going to rely more on the Postal Service in terms of solicitation in the wake of the pandemic?
That's a hard question. And let me take the first part first. The PPP loan program has helped a number of small nonprofits, but the PPP loan program is capped at 500 employees or less. We are currently in the midst of working with the Federal Reserve. They're coming up with a loan program for nonprofits of more than 500 employees, up to 15,000 employees. They've yet to finalize it, and they've yet to be granted loan forgiveness, which is absolutely critical. The real beauty of the PPP program is if monies are directed primarily toward retaining employees, the entire loan can be forgiven. We badly need that for nonprofits that have more than 500 employees, and we're hoping to get that, but we don't have that as yet. That's just part of Bob's question. Now, the other part in terms of reliance on the mail, I can't give you specific figures right now, but my instinct tells me that the mail will be every bit as important, if not more important, in this period of great need. And again, when one's seeking a larger contribution, it's got to be asked through the mail. That's the only way to get it done. And I think the mail will continue to be extremely important through this entire COVID period and, frankly, thereafter.
With that, Mark, I really want to thank you for coming, joining us today on Naps Chat. Again, this is Mark McCauley, the Vice President for Government Affairs at the Nonprofit Alliance. Thank you for joining us today, Mark.
Bob, it was a pleasure, and when they open up Capitol Hill again to visitors, I can't wait to be with you up on the Hill, but being with you virtually is always great, and this was a very nice invitation extended. I really enjoyed this opportunity.
Thank you for joining us, Mark, and so that's it for this week, and have a great weekend.
I'm going to sit right down and write myself a letter.